What do you get when you have one voiceover girl?
And me? That makes two voiceover girls.
Oh, okay. What do you get when you have two voiceover girls separated by one pond and two perspectives?
Oh, I know. You get the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast.
That's right. Let's listen to Romy and Jessica as they share their journey into the voiceover industry.
Recently, I had the wonderful opportunity to sit and chat with author Landon Beach and audiobook narrator Scott Brick about their latest collaboration, Narrator. I also asked them a few questions about the audiobook creation process. Let's have a listen.
Shall we talk about the audiobook?
Let's.
Okay. So if one of you wants to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, like we're in an interview for work.
Well, my name is Landon Beach, and thank you, Jessica, for having us on today. I published my first book in 2018 called The Wreck, and I've just come out with my seventh book, which is a sequel called Huron Nights. And the penultimate book to that release was Narrator. And I've been blessed to work with Scott Brick on all of my books as he is the narrator for all of them. So that's a little bit about my career so far. I say it's akin to writing a first draft and then a second draft. In the second draft, you act like you knew what you were doing in draft one all along.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, you just glossed over all your service to your country. You glossed over all your many years as an instructor. I mean, come on. People want to know these things.
That's right.
Well, that's in there too. I was a naval officer, very proud and honored to serve our country. And also, I was an educator, a high school language arts teacher for 15 years, which was a profession that I loved and adored. And it's been neat to look back on those and still be excited too about my third act here as a full-time author. All right, Scott, does that do it?
That covers it. That covers it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I come from a background of stage and screen acting. I went to UCLA in their theater department, mumble years ago. I did about 10 years of Shakespeare touring throughout the state of California, doing Shakespeare for students. Got part of an equity tour that took us to all parts of the state. It was a great learning ground. But ultimately, what wound up happening is in 1999, June 10th, I remember it because I wrote it down for tax purposes. June 10th, 1999, I did my first audiobook. And there have been over 1,000 of them since. And I remember the very first one thinking, boy, if I never get to do another one of these again, I can be happy because I love this work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always treated it, I've always gone into it knowing that your current job is your audition for the next one.
Right.
And I've never forgotten that. All these years later, suddenly Landon reaches out through my website, reaches out through my production manager, Gina Smith. And we worked on the first one was it The Wreck?
The Wreck, yeah.
It's The Wreck, right. You know, before I know it, you know, we've done three or four books at this point. Before I know it, he's emailing me saying, hey, can I interview you? Thinking about doing a book set in the world of voiceover.
Oh, that's awesome.
Sure. So we're talking and, you know, a lot of things get talked about in the industry. And then suddenly, 6 months later, he sends me a manuscript and I went, oh, wait. So you actually did it. Next thing I know, we're working on this marvelous book called Narrator.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't listened to the whole thing yet. So I think I'm in like where it's in part three, where, you know, there's sort of this, well, I don't want to give it away, but there's part three. So I've made it through part of the book and there's still quite a bit left to go. And I think it's kind of a cool take on it where, you know, you get to see inside the booth and you get to hear all of the lingo that gets thrown around a little bit. And then to have it be this suspenseful, like murder mystery is not the word, but like crime kind of thing. It's just like, it's just the best because I love books like that. So to add the voiceover piece to it, that was cool.
when I describe it to friends of mine, they say, what kind of book is it? I tell them it's a suspense thriller.
Yes, and, there we go. That's the one.
And it's interesting you mentioned all the terms that we use in our industry.
Uh-huh.
Work behind a microphone. Landon was so precise about that. Up to a week, maybe 2 weeks before the book came out, yeah. he emailed me one day and he's doing one final pass, one final revision. And he said, is there a record button? Is there a button that you push
to
record? And I said, no, frankly, I mean, we're not working with hardware. We're working with software for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, but would it be acceptable? Because he said originally, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Landon, I think the original idea was that the main character says, I hit the record button and I proceed.
Right. Right.
And he said, would it be okay if I said, I hit record and I proceed? And I say, yes, we say that all the time.
Yeah.
We just don't have the word button in it.
Well,
and
you know,
I know it's the change has been made.
That's cool. Yeah.
It was one of those things where, you know, I'm as a researcher, before I'm a writer, I want to be very respectful to, you know, the craft and the audience. Mm-hmm. And for 99% of the listeners, it is a psychological thriller for them to listen to and enjoy the twists and turns. But also for that 1% of people that are in the voice arts industry, Scott and I wanted to make sure that it was a book for them too. And I was concerned because I didn't want anything to take anyone out of the listening experience. And the one example that he gave is perfect because, you know, you remember the little Staples red, make it easy button.
Right.
Yes.
It was in the middle of the night and it hasn't happened like this. There are different things that I'll wake up sweating and look, you know, it's 3 a.m. and I'm looking at the wall and wondering, did I get that right? Did I say that? But in that case, it was basically seeing the Staples button on my wall in my bedroom going, wait a minute, is there really a button? Just because I assumed that there was. And so I reached out to Scott and I was glad that we got that, you know, adjusted, not that the book, you know, would be probably any less, you know, to the common fan, but it would have, I think, taken some people out that are in the industry. And that was important to me and important to Scott when it finally got released. So we got it in there.
That's good. I mean, that definitely helps because you've got a bunch of people who are listening to it that are in the industry and they're gonna judge it a little differently. So by going and doing that research and making sure that it's accurate, it makes it better for them. And then they go and they share it with everybody else and then other people listen. So smart.
Yeah. Well, very smart. One thing I wanted to be clear about when it was released, and you know, it starts as an idea and something just grows until it finally gets released to the consumer. But it did in one way end up being a book about them and a book for them. And mm-hmm. I was really happy that through the creative process that ended up coming together. You never quite know whether it'll be that way, but other than people that have listened to the book who are not in the industry and have reached out to me, some of the most wonderful moments in the last 4 or 5 months are hearing from industry professionals that they enjoyed, that mm-hmm. it was a book about them and that they were able to tell some of their family members, like, you know, you think that I just go and have this easy job reading a book all day, but listen to this book. It's different.
Yeah.
Minus the, you know, kidnapping possibly and things.
I have to say, one of the most important men in my life, in my entire career, has been a dear friend of mine named Dan Musselman, who actually blurbed the book, if I'm remembering correctly, Landon.
Yeah.
Before, I think he was just retiring from Penguin Random House at the time that Landon reached out. And Dan always said, the average book has 100,000 words. And when you're doing the audio, you could get 99,999 of them correct. But you screw up on that one word,
you
mispronounce
my
that one word,
yes.
And that's what the listener is going to walk away with.
Oh, yeah.
That's, it's going to color their impression of the entire experience. Well, it's much the same way with the verisimilitude. And, you know, I could use a word like that because, you know, I read books.
Right. Right. Lots of them.
Right.
Is there a decanter of brandy behind you?
Yes. This is my decanter of brandy.
Oh, there you go. Just hold it around the little lid. Like,
yes. Right. Yeah. Yes. But it's the same thing with the truthfulness that Landon was able to capture for this book. Because frankly, for those listening, if they heard Sean Frost, the main character, say, "I hit the record button," everybody in the industry would go,
"Yeah."
It would be like, it would be as though I had mispronounced a word.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. It's the smallest things that folks notice and then pick apart. So yeah, it's very good to make sure that you're authentic and accurate. So yeah. That's awesome. Very cool. So I'm sure that folks would, like the people that listen to us, you know, for our podcast, they're kind of more in the beginner stage of everything. Mm-hmm. And so they are just getting involved in audiobooks. Audiobooks scare a lot of people. So they probably would be interested to know what that process ended up looking like to put that book together.
Well, I guess I can start from the author's standpoint and then shift over to Scott when you got involved in the project.
And if I may, just before you begin, since your viewers are newcomers, please mm-hmm. keep in mind that when we're talking about the interaction between author and narrator, you get to create your author relationships. You get to contribute to the author relationships. So mm-hmm. please pay attention, because I think that's really important for newcomers to know that mm-hmm. you can help one another out wherever possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it was certainly a blessing on this project and everything that we've done together. But really for me, Jessica, it was a 20-year adventure of trying to figure out how to tell an entertainment comeback story within the framework of a psychological thriller. But the seed and the genesis of the idea was really that. And it was difficult. That's why it was 20 years, because so much has been done, whether it be an author, like in Stephen King's Misery, mm-hmm. or a disc jockey, in Play Misty for me, or anything else. You can think of a filmmaker, you can think of a producer, something of that nature.
Right.
And so it wasn't until after working with Scott for three books, we had worked on three books and become friends and gotten to know each other a little bit better, that suddenly it came to my mind that I said, you know, I don't think anyone has ever written a novel with an audiobook narrator as the main character, set within the framework of a psychological thriller. And I said, I've got my idea. And then one of the things of working with Scott for the three books is I realized how little I knew about the process. I was so ignorant as an author. And for those of you becoming narrators and in the beginning of your career from an author standpoint, I will tell you that we as authors, we haven't done our job, our due diligence. We know nothing. We do not know what your day is like, what you go through to make this happen. And so the amount of respect that I gathered in the over a year of research that I did, because I wanted it to be well-researched, authentic, and not take anybody out of the experience, I had a whole new level of understanding as far as you can without actually being the performer. You're not the artist until you do it. If anything, I was a failed artist, because I tried it for 10 or 15 minutes of reading a book and failed miserably. I said, my gosh, this is hard. and so I finally got to the point where I felt comfortable enough to approach Scott with the idea, because of his knowledge of the industry and how long he's been in it, and as a performer and my friend and working together. And so I had some questions, as he alluded to earlier, and I interviewed him. And then I felt like I had enough to, let's give this a shot and go write the novel. And then we didn't speak with each other for months. And then finally, once I had it to a point where I thought it was ready to be seen, which is always a scary moment for an author, I let Scott know. And that would be where I think, you know, the collaboration, to use a loose term here, really took place, because then it was Scott gave the manuscript a read, and I think I'll let him take it from here about what that looked like up until the day when we finally had our launch day and released it. But that's where the idea started and how I got to Scott when he was looking at that first draft.
I got a hard copy in the mail, which was great, because frankly, I still prefer when I'm doing my prep, I work all day with a tablet. I'd rather not carry around with me all night. So actually having a hard copy was wonderful. And so he has an early, an ARC, advanced reading copy. He sends it to me. He says, if you could you take a look at this and let me know any changes I need to make before recording starts? And and I want to say, I'm reasonably certain this is around Memorial Day, because we were watching the Indy 500 here at my house. I'd just gotten through the first couple of chapters. I may have finished the book by then, but the cover design is rather graphic. It's the microphone and a bloody knife, stuck into a desktop, and field of blood, that kind of thing. And my buddy Josh had come over to watch the race with me, and he said, "What is this?" And I said, "Oh, it's a book about a narrator who gets kidnapped and kind of being forced to record a book." And first of all, he asks, is it okay if I pick it up and read it? I said, sure. And the Indy 500 goes on for hours, right? There are 250 laps, 200 laps. So he's just kind of glancing at it for a while. And ultimately he says, can I take this with me? And, so I can finish it. And I had, I'd gone through it already. I said, sure, yeah. And he looks at it and he pauses and he says, and he holds it up and he says, you realize you're going to die this way, right? I said, yeah, ha ha. He goes, no, this is a blueprint. You're going to die this way. but frankly, what came about after that reading were from my part, they were events like when Landon reached out and said, is there a record button? Mm-hmm. Only in this case, he had asked me to look for any inconsistencies with either the time in the booth or just the way the industry is presented. There are plenty of scenes among agents and producers and awards ceremonies. Mm-hmm. One I remember in particular, there's I don't think I'm going to give too much away. It's in the first chapter. At the Audi Awards, Billy Dee Williams, his memoir, and I've forgotten the name of it. What did you call that?
Lando and the Cape of Many Colors.
Lando and the Cape of Many Colors. That's brilliant. In it, a woman, a female narrator, wins Best Female Narrator of the Year for doing Billy Dee Williams' memoir. And I said, I hate to tell you, I mean, that's a, because I love that title so much, The Cape of Many Colors. I said, but that wouldn't happen. The audiobook industry is very gender and ethnicity centric. And, if a book is written by an Hispanic male, then they're going to get an Hispanic male to record it. Mm-hmm. And having a woman read a man's autobiography or vice versa, I said, I hate to tell you, it just doesn't happen. And what I loved about it, his response, the way he handled it was elegant. He said, I'd love to keep it if possible. What if we just acknowledged in the text that this just never happens?
Oh, but that's awesome.
part of the reason why it's a spectacular occasion. Why part of the reason why she winds up winning the award.
Right.
And it's just like, if there's an elephant in the room, mention the elephant.
Yeah. And a cool way to bring that in as an idea. Like if we're looking at shifting things in the industry with gender bias and things like that, what a cool way to introduce that as a topic, and say, hey, look, this can happen.
Exactly. And it's a way to stretch our parameters as, mm-hmm. you know, as audiobook producers, but also for the average listener who's never recorded an audiobook, but listens to them all the time, they may not have even noticed. Right. Oh, that's right. You know, so-and-so read this guy's autobiography. You know, I think Sean Penn read Bob Dylan's autobiography, you know, mm-hmm. and deservedly so. And, you know, that's right. They didn't hire a woman to record it. Frankly, I thought it was a really great way to just raise awareness of what's going on behind the scenes, whether it's in the booth or just within the industry itself.
Yeah. And, you know, Jessica, I always strive for there to be a little something in each book for everybody too, so that everyone can enjoy it and be inclusive. And one thing about that collaborative moment, it sort of sums up the whole experience actually, because in the Audi Awards, you have the three awards at the end of the night, which of course are Best Female Narrator, Best Male Narrator, and Audiobook of the Year. And from a dramatic standpoint, I had to have things occur, because when the Best Male Narrator part of the evening goes up, that's where Sean's involved. And I couldn't have the award be 6 or 7 earlier, and especially because there's not a speaking part for there, because those are the only three speaking parts of the awards. And so that was a sense of my research was accurate in terms of when the events took place in the Audis. And then Scott came in and educated me on this is how the industry works within those parameters. And for us to get it to work, it was better to say that and then give Billy Dee a great line like, who says Courtney can't narrate my book, which nice. Would be his character in real life. And so, I mean, I was about 10 rows behind the stage when I saw Billy Dee in person back in 2005 and just, you know, enamored. And he is one of my heroes. I would love to meet the guy in real life. I think it'd be fantastic. But that was just this synergy. And there were a couple other moments. One time I had a narrator a certain distance away from the microphone that I thought I was right with, when you whisper and you get real low. And Scott said, you know, I've got to tell you, Landon, it's not this distance, it's this distance. Mm-hmm. And we changed that, which I was grateful for. I said, yes, let's go with what really works. That's how it proceeded. And I think the two of us would admit that this was book 6. So we were friends and very comfortable with each other in our working relationship. But to the young narrators out there working with authors, you know, it doesn't start like this with every author,
right?
But also don't let that prevent you from exploring something that might be able to happen like this. That's just some other people have asked me. They're like, oh, you know, Landon, you know, authors always have this with narrators. And I talk to my author friends and 90% of them don't. They send the book off and they never talk to their narrator. They never know them. And the first time they hear it is when it's released into the marketplace. And so this has been unique and amazing and fun. It's been great. So there are possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I love about it too, is it's shown me what can happen. Is look, there are some authors who get audio, mm-hmm. and then there are some who don't. And when I get in touch with them and I say, hey, this is an issue, you know, I'm you put in Roman numerals, it's a visual cue for the reader of the print version, right. Whether it's, you know, the dead tree version or the ebook edition. I said the listener won't have that. I need to explain that it's in Roman numerals. And I've had authors get back to me and say, no, I'd prefer it if you would just read it as written.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I get it, you know. But Landon understands. And I hesitate to use the word collaboration because it's his book. But to the extent that I collaborated on my end, it was mostly a matter of, you know, look, I'd gone over the manuscript, but certain things don't hit you until you're in the booth. And so every time something came up, I'd be like, hey, you know, again, distance to the microphone, whatever it was. I had an email in my drafts folder, and I went in and added to it anytime something like that came up. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were really up against it time-wise, because we really wanted to get it up by a certain date. This is given my, you know, I've got a crazy busy schedule, and in the past we've had to record, we've had to produce, release the audiobook after the print version has come out.
Oh yeah, and you kind of want to do them simultaneously.
Exactly. Landon asked if we could achieve that this time. So I said, "Yep, absolutely." Mm-hmm. And we did everything we could. And quite often in the past, I would have the entire book recorded, and I of course send it to him so that he can hear it mm-hmm. and make whatever, you know, notes, changes are required, and send it back to me. I seem to remember that on this book, I was sending him in bunches, at least like, you know, first half, second half, that kind of thing. So we could get started on it.
That's a nice way to do it, I think. I have one author. Well, all of the authors that I work with, I some people will advise against it, but I prefer it. I send like, and I typically work with like independents, like through ACX or something, because I still have to get in with the publishing houses, you know, but I hear advice where they're like, don't upload a chapter at a time, because after a certain point, it's up to you and they don't have the say, and you don't want them to micromanage. And for me, I've had a couple of people that I've worked with that have been kind of micromanagers, and I just have to say, okay, that's enough. But overall, working with an author and doing it a chapter or two or five at a time, it's so nice because you can get instantaneous feedback that may actually change what you do in the coming chapters. You know, or like one of the books that I was working on with an author that I've been working with since, you know, a few years ago, was like, I had a voice for her male character, and I had missed that this guy was going to be the hero. I don't know how I missed that, but I did. And so I had this voice that I had created for him, and I had uploaded that chapter, and she's like, no, wait, stop, do something different. This is our hero. You can't do that voice. And so it was cool because I was able to fix it like within a chapter or two, you know, before I had the rest of the book done and had to redo all of his dialogue.
Listen, I'll tell you what, the best direction I ever got was from an author mm-hmm. and an author I've never met, that frankly nobody's ever met. There's a guy named John 12 Hawks, who it's a pseudonym. He readily admits it. That's not his name. He doesn't do author appearances. His books are all about living off the grid. Mm-hmm. When he talks to his publisher, he does it with a scrambled sat phone. He doesn't want society to, you know, he tries to avoid security cams, everything like that. You know, but that's his brand. That's what his books tend to be about. They're speculative fiction. And he wrote a book this one time called Spark. And it was about a guy who basically has no human emotion. Mm-hmm. He had a traumatic brain injury. And as a result, he had something called Cotard syndrome, which is real. It's where you live believing that you were dead.
Oh.
And the title Spark is, you know, when he would look at a person, he would just see spark of life. That person is alive. Oh. I am not. That kind of thing. It was crazy and creepy and brilliant. But anyway, it's told from the first person, from the point of view of this character with Cotard syndrome. And I was like, well, sure, I could do that. And I got about a page or two into it, and I think I was just a bit too monotone. And the director of the project shared with me an email that he had gotten from the author the night before. And we had worked together three or four times on the author's previous trilogy. And he said, please remind Scott that it isn't that the character doesn't have emotion. It's that the character used to have emotion, and now he's looking for it again.
Oh, I can totally hear the difference.
Right?
Yeah.
And suddenly I was like, oh my God. And I think I wound up playing him as kind of like an adjusted Mr. Spock.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
The Vulcans, they don't live without emotion. They just don't allow their emotion to rule them.
Right.
And so I was like, if I had not, and that got shared with me, as you were talking about, you know, that was in the first chapter. And I would have had to redo that whole book.
Yeah.
So, getting feedback from your author is invaluable mm-hmm. when you're working in the booth.
Yeah. One thing from an author's perspective that I have appreciated is that Scott and I have pre-recording conferences where we talk over issues beforehand, and it has so streamlined the rest of the process. So if you have an opportunity as a new narrator, possibly reach out to the author and see if that might be a possibility. It could be a way to just enhance communication. And what I appreciated what Scott did on narrator, which was different than the other books, and I think it was called for both of us on this project, was that because he took it in chunks and gave me a lot to think about the first 120 pages or so, I began to think about the rest of the book and said, oh, well, I might have gotten this wrong, or this might need to be changed a little bit. And it helped us kind of, you know, have some foresight into that, which, you know, when you get the whole thing at once, that's really hard to do. But in chunks like that, it was really beneficial.
Yeah. I had an example of something like that, like the hands-off narrator or narrator and an author relationship with somebody I've worked with a few times. And he's a construction guy that loves to write. And there was this one character that was a cab driver, but he was like the regular cab driver for the main characters. And I ended up doing the voice and kind of creating the voice as I was kind of getting ready for it and putting my voice list together, my little audio prints on the, you know, on the file.
And, sure, your samples. Yeah.
Yeah. My little samples. And then I start looking through some of the pages in the back of the book and I'm like, the author had actually forgotten that he had given this taxi driver one type of accent in the beginning of the book and gave him a different accent in the back part of the book.
Oh, boy.
And so I was like, so I noticed that. And he's like, oh, let me quick fix that. And luckily for him, like it was mostly ebook and not so much physical copy. So he could update it and it was self-published. And so it was fairly simple comparatively, but like, I was just like, oh man, had we had that,
yeah,
you know, back and forth, it could have been prevented.
You know, it's like you wanted to ask him, did he turn in, was he a spy all along?
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Look, I've had things happen where I'm working on a book, and this was before I was working directly with authors. This was going through major publishers. I was doing a book for Random House at one point, and it was a World War II espionage thriller. And at one point, so this is what, 1944, the book is set. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they're talking about a British officer, and it says, in Her Majesty's Secret Service, I think the phrase was used. And I said, well, that's all well and good, but it's Her Majesty today, but it was His Majesty in 1944.
Oh, right.
That was still King George.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I read it the right way.
Yep.
And I sent it off to the publisher. Well, the Random House, they sent it off to the publisher, the note to the print department. And you talk about pushback. And it was actually from the author. The author was like, just do it as written.
Oh my gosh. No.
Oh yeah. No, there are times where it's like, I don't want to be told I'm wrong. You know?
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
Random House totally got it. They were totally on board saying, we need to get this right. But the author didn't want it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's why, look, every day that I wake up and get to record a book by Landon, not to blow smoke up his ass, he doesn't need me to do that. He's got tons of readers and listeners who could do that. But
right. But
the fact of the matter is, every day that there's at least this openness could I make this the best version I can. Look, it's a privilege.
Yeah.
It's a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got the same author that I was telling you about where I got the wrong voice. I've been working with her and it's such a cool collaboration kind of thing. I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. It's their book, but I get to help bring it to life, you know, in voice. And so it'll just be fun where like she does sci-fi and kind of sci-fi romances and does just a ton of books because romance people like they just devour books, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so she's constantly writing and her stories are great. And it's just funny because she'll have names because these people are on like alien planets. And so she'll be like making up species and how they look and how their names and these words that are on signs or something. And I'm like, well, how do you say this? How do say, hell if I know, just be consistent. It's fine. You know, and it's okay. Okay, great. You know, so I have kind of a little bit of autonomy to do that, but yet she can let me know if she has a specific way that she wants something to be said or, you know, something like that. It's cool.
That's great.
Yeah. It's so cool.
And in the same way, you know, I do feel blessed to work with Scott because this can be a really intimidating and cruel business. And, yeah. You know, every step along the way, you are in a vulnerable place. There's no escaping it. Now, throughout years and years in it, you can get used to that sort of, but it never really goes away. And so, you know, having someone who's receptive and, you know, operating through kindness and respect and openness, I have found to be the superior way than bitterness and, you know, one-sided, I'm right.
Well, gosh, guys, I think you guys have a meeting coming up here in a few minutes, so I've got to let you get out of here.
We have our prep call for the next
one. So I guess probably last question that I'll ask of both of you is probably if you have any, like, cool tips, tricks, advice, something like that, that you would share with our listeners who are getting into the industry but not necessarily experts yet.
Well, I can start off. Is that okay, Scott, if I go?
Please, sure.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I have learned from this partnership and friendship is that if you put yourself in a position where you can reach out to the narrator or author and see, you know, kind of take their temperature of where they're at and to know that in that one sense, because you want to put out the best possible product, that you're on the same team and collaborative partners, you never know what will develop from that and some out of the box opportunities that you never thought of. I guess I'm circling back to the beginning of the interview where, you know, in draft two, you always try to convince people that you knew exactly what you were doing in draft one. It's been completely rewarding. And I've said this in other interviews too. I can't see narrator without it. That's probably the biggest thing that I could, you know, say to someone new in the business is if that opportunity is there, you know, go for it, see what happens.
Yeah.
My advice is about decision-making. I've always thought that, you know, the two most powerful words in the English language are two of the shortest. It's yes and no. Mm-hmm. When I, you know, I don't want to say no because I'm a people pleaser. I want to be able to help out. I want to be able to say yes to every single author who comes along, and yet I can't get it all done. And sometimes the books that they want me to record aren't going to serve my career very well. Yeah. I've been asked to record some wild books, and I'm like, I appreciate that. I appreciate the money that you're throwing at me, but recording this doesn't fit my brand, if you will, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I try to remind people, no is a complete sentence.
I love it.
Typically, when I say yes, what I usually say is yes. And learned that from a dear friend many years ago. You know, if somebody comes to me and I see that they've got 20 books under their belt, and if I do want to do their book, I'll look at them up. I'll look them up online and see, you know, have all of their books been done on audio? And if they haven't, and they appear to sell very well, I'll say, yes, I'd be happy to do your new book. And how about some of your old backlist titles?
Yeah.
Right? I think the way that we answer those questions is vital to us as narrators. But also, I want to point out that you should be open to change. Because frankly, when Landon first got in touch, he gets in touch with Gina, who manages my empire.
There you go.
And Gina then asks me, hey, do you have time to fit this in? And to be honest, when Landon came along, I was like, I am way too busy. I just don't have the time. I'm slammed with work. And she started explaining this to him. And he sent along his first book, The Wreck, and said, would Scott be willing to just take a look at it just to make sure? And I did. And I went, I don't want to say no to this.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And I'm so grateful that I didn't. So again, be creative in the ways that you use the words yes and no,
yeah,
but also be open to change.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that, because you can always work something out where you can say, you know, don't have time right now, but here's a break in my schedule where we can work that out. Does that work out for you? Like, sometimes a no is mm-hmm. not like a no way, Jose. It's like a no, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A dear friend of mine, he's actually in the Narrator Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I don't know who it is, but he came to me and said he had a major author come to him. No, well, through the publisher.
Right.
And the publisher said, I need to record on these dates. And before he answered them, he called me and said, I can't do those dates. What do I say? I don't want to give up on this book. And I said, well, do you have alternate dates that you could do? And they wanted those dates. You know, let's say it's through the January 15th through the 21st. Okay, they wanted from 10 to 4. Could you do 4 to 10? You know, could if you've got something during those dates, if that's why you're saying no, could you do it in the evening? Could you do it on the weekends? Are there anything else, any other dates that you can offer them? Because he was just focused on, no, I can't do those dates.
Right.
Thinking that it was going to ace him out, you know, cancel him from the process, disqualify him from the process. And yeah. I said, no, just give him an alternative.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
You're then you're not only the narrator, you're the problem solver.
Yes. And that can be huge. That can be huge, because sometimes, you know, somebody gets too close to a project. I mean, this is your baby. Like, you've been working with it for so long and you have this idea. And so when something doesn't quite work out, sometimes you're too close to see that there's this like very simple solution. I can't tell you how many times I've been on, you know, either side of that, where, you know, I'm saying, oh my gosh. And then somebody says, well, why don't you, whatever it is. And I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah. That's duh. You know? So, and I've also been that person where they're like, oh, right. But you get so close to it that sometimes you miss that stuff. And if you just throw out something, they're like, oh yeah, sure, that'll work. But you'll never know unless you offer it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always extra pressure, I think, because it's a deadline oriented business.
Mm-hmm.
And that just adds something, whether it takes us out of our startup routine or normal schema.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes to pause and say, let me think about this for a minute.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited that I have the opportunity to share this interview with you. I hope you got as much out of it as I did. How amazing is it to learn from some of the best what that process looks like from first draft to final product? And don't forget, go check out that audiobook. It's called Narrator, written by Landon Beach and narrated by Scott Brick. Thanks again for listening to the VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast. If you'd like to join our Facebook group, you can do that at facebook.com/groups/VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond. Until next time, bye.
Thanks for joining us for the VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast. This is where we would normally shout out to our sponsors.
Jessica, we don't have any sponsors yet.
I know, but if we did, this would be the shout out. Hint, hint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast.
And tell all your friends, your family, your neighbors, and everyone else.